Abibi Fahodie, this is Brother Amos with African Liberation Media, and tonight we have with us, we're honored to have with us, a very special guest, an elder that I consider to be a master teacher, because he has truly mastered his craft in studying the Nile Valley, a brother who you're very familiar with, Baba Ashraf Kwesi. How you doing tonight, Baba?
What's up, Brother Amos? How's everything? Thank you for the title, but always got to keep humility and be humble in this position, because you can take off with helium balloons. So I just say I just got a little piece of the knowledge. So thank you for the title, Master Teacher, PKV, Positive Kinetic Vision. They gave me that title years ago. But, you know, we all have a piece of the knowledge. And as long as we master each one of the pieces and put it together, then we can start to move forward as a people. So this knowledge is so vast. You know, I'm honored that people call me that, but I have to stay humble.
That's right.
If not, you know, we got a lot of crazy egotistical maniacs running around out here now.
That's right. That's right. Well, we know you're coming out to Charlotte soon. We know you'll be here on March the 8th. And I want to talk a little bit about not only what you'll be talking about in Charlotte, but just want to talk a little bit about your background in general. And if you could just talk to our listeners and tell them how you got on this journey, or what put you on this journey, that you've been on a lifelong journey over 37 years of your life now to today.
Mm-hmm. Well, like all of us, you know, we go from one psychological gas chamber to the next, and I'm talking about the European classroom. So you know, going into their schools and going into a process, I don't really consider ever being educated by Europeans. I always felt that I was in the process of being trained. And so being in training and meeting Dr. Bennett at Long Beach State back in 1973, that was the first time that evoked my consciousness in terms of who we are as a people at that time. The Black Power movement was very strong, and even though I was in the political movement at that time, in terms of the consciousness of Black Power. But even though it was covering the political issues, it wasn't dealing with a lot of our story, our history, and definitely not our divinity. And Dr. Ben, he lectured back in 1973 at Long Beach State. And when I heard him, that was the first time I heard our divinity and our history connecting with the whole political movement at that time. That's the first time someone pulled that together for me. And after the lecture, I asked Dr. Ben, can you prove what you said here today? And I tell this story all the time. And he said, well, young man, not only can I prove it, I can take you back and show you. And so that's the first time someone told me that they could show me. And so that became my dream, to return back to Africa. And I made that journey in 1981 and started to do an apprenticeship under him, 14 years with him doing the field research. So that started my journey back during that time, and I started to put together visual documentation on lectures and covering areas that were very serious, especially when we're dealing with the Bible. And most people think of the Bible, they start off with Adam and Eve, and some try to make it Adam and Steve today. Mm-hmm. But in any case, that's our reference. Our reference is the circumference of mythical, biblical stories. It has no historical fact whatsoever in many cases. But these are things that we're pretty much taught to believe, and, you know, dealing with history. And so that started my journey at that time. And that started a period where I had to eventually liberate myself from the system, as we all, you know, work in some form or fashion, some of us, in the system. So I realized to be independent, I had to. And to do what I'm doing today, I had to free myself from the system. And you got to excuse me here. I've been on the phone all day dealing with international calls here, trying to cover some things. So I may sound like I'm a little tired, which I am. So that started my journey. And at that time, you know, you didn't have all the technology that you have today in terms of the YouTube and all those kind of things. So we had a slide projector. That's the kind of operation we work with at that time. And Dr. Ben and I lectured together in many times in many places, and he would do the give the lecture. And that's where I started with the visual documentation, because Dr. Ben would get some profound statements that would just rock the house. Mm-hmm. And like, for instance, he would always say, heaven is between the legs of the African woman. Mm-hmm. And of course, that would rock the house when he would say that. But of course, dealing with the historical perspective of what he was calling that from was Pepi II of the Sixth Dynasty. And Pepi II of the Sixth Dynasty said that heaven was between the legs of the goddess Nut. And for those of us who know Kemet, we know that the Neturt, or the goddess of the heavens, was always displayed as a goddess, an African goddess, stretched out in a form of an arch. So that's how our ancestors portrayed the heavens, that they referred to as the Dwat, okay, or the spiritual realm. And here you see in all the tombs, like in the West Bank and the Valley of the Kings, you see KV5, okay, one of Dr. Ben's most favorite places, where this tomb is still, the paint is still there, elaborate painting there of Ramesu V of the 19th dynasty. And there you see Nut giving birth to the sun, the S-U-N sun. So that was referred to as the macro womb. And the micro womb is our mother's womb, giving birth to the S-O-N sun. So this is how Dr. Ben would quote that we are the micro universe, okay, and that we came from in the macro universe. So I started to show the slides, okay. That's how I actually started my slide presentation. So when Dr. Ben would say that, and then I would come and show the slides, and then everybody would get where he was saying, heaven is between the legs of the African woman. And going back to the spiritual consciousness of our ancestors, that was, of course, the goddess Nut. And this is the spiritual teachings. It goes back thousands of years before the Western world was even in existence. And many ideas that we see, whether it's dealing with Western history and civilization, many of these things were literally plagiarized from ancient Kemet. And as well as we see in terms of the Bible and the opening the pages of the heavens and the earth and all these things were literally a copy from African people. So that's just so that, you know, you get into this journey and it starts to be a time warp. Okay, mm-hmm. You're in a time warp and you don't even realize, I don't even realize that 37 years have gone by now. Okay, and peace be upon our grandmaster teacher, who's now an ancestor now, Dr. Ben. Without him, who actually opened up a lot of consciousness in terms of his work. In fact, the first black first book I came in contact with was Black Man of the Now. And that was way back in the 70s. And never knowing that I would travel that whole now with him and, you know, doing the field research. So, you know, as well as many other books. And he concentrated a lot on religion. In fact, another one of my favorites is our black seminarians and black clergy without a black theology and the need for a black Bible. So this was evoking a lot of consciousness in terms of the work that he put out there. Mm-hmm. And of course, there were many other scholars who covered a lot of other areas, as I said in the opening, that we all, there's many, many pieces, and all we have to do is master our piece and put it in with the masterpiece of our ancestral knowledge. And so that was Dr. Ben's area. And at that time, the Nile Valley civilization, he's the one that actually opened that up in terms of doing educational programs and tours back to Africa. Prior to Dr. Ben, it was pretty much preachers going to Egypt, pretty much going to Cairo, and then on to Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And in their own warp thinking and their indoctrination, that they were taught that they were going to see the pyramids, that the evil Pharaoh got who enslaved the Jews to build the pyramids, and there's no documentation whatsoever. And then they say, well, who was it that did it? And they say, giving the name Ramsey, okay, proper name Ramesu, saying that he's the one that enslaved the Jews, which he has nothing to do with pyramid building. In fact, Ramesu looked at the pyramids just like we look at the pyramids today. They were already ancient before him. But if we really want to look at a pyramid builder, we have to go look at Taharqa, who in fact had no slaves building his pyramids in Nuri. But in fact, here he in fact saved the Hebrews from annihilation of the Assyrians, but they don't speak of him at all. And he's the only pharaoh, or Nesu, as our ancestors would call king, that's in the Bible, in Kings in the Bible, who is a pyramid builder. So this is the information, you know, that we bring for liberation and coming there to Charlotte. And considering this is Black History Month, and peace be upon Carter G. Woodson, in his book he wrote, The Miseducation of the Negro, and my favorite quote by him, that if a people have no history, if a people have no worthwhile tradition, it becomes a negligible factor in the thought of the world that they stand in the danger of being exterminated. So this is the power of history and knowing our story, especially when you take in consideration the Ma'afa, okay, or the kidnapping of our ancestors, okay, and forcing us into slavery. And this is just, it actually, when you look at historical timeline, that's really recent history. It's only 150 years ago. So we're still going through a process of emancipation. It's only mental at this time. So that's a little bit of information in terms of that journey that I've been on in dissemination of information for liberation.
And I've often heard you quote Dr. Ben when you told us that he told you you have to educate to liberate. What's one of the hardest things that you have found over the years in reaching our people in educating them for liberation?
Well, unfortunately, you know, like I said before, you know, we went through that psychological gas chamber called the classroom, European classroom, and going through that psychological gas chamber, we were totally indoctrinated into white idolatry. White idolatry is the worshiping of white images and worshiping of white people and even worshiping, you know, white folks as God and the image we were given to us as God. So, of course, this is what regurgitates up out of the consciousness of a lot of black folks when you start to counter that, okay, with the historical facts of our ancestors is that the first mental state that comes is the protection of white folks because this is a mental enslavement. When the enemy becomes the deity in the spiritual subconscious or our mind, we actually mentally and psychologically protect white folks and don't even know it. When one has been indoctrinated into deifying and worshiping white folks through their religion, whether we're in Western academia through the European classroom, that everything started with Europeans. So, of course, this is where the battle starts, okay, and the saving, or where the slave, where one is a mental slave, is still trying to save European Western culture, Western religions, and the white God, Jesus, white Jesus, and so forth. This is the major battle right here. They have circumscribed our circumference to think within the Western diameter. So most of our thought and thinking and what we know is within a 2,000-year time period. When you start to go beyond that, then many of our people don't know. If they do know it, it's through a Hebrew story. But when you start to get into the African story that predates the Hebrew story by thousands of years, then, of course, we become totally oblivious to this. And then the slave will fight. The slave will fight to maintain his master's history and his master's religion and the deification of his master in the image of God. So this is the biggest battle, and that's why the visual documentation, not just showing it, okay, but going back to the books in stone. And when I refer to the books in stone, I'm referring to the temples itself. As Dr. Ben told me when I opened with, that I can take you back and show you. Okay, so that's the reliefs and the monuments and temples and doing a comparative analysis. So that's one of the things Dr. Ben saw that I liked a lot, that I liked doing the field with the comparison. So when I worked with him, that's what I did. I did the field, did the comparison. He would make sure that I would show the group things that he wanted me to point out. And so I grew out of doing that, starting that at that time. And he would do the hotel lectures at that time. So that way people can see it carved in stone, okay, here thousands of years before the Western world was even in existence. So when you do that comparative analysis, you, especially when brothers and sisters make that longest journey in their life, and that's the journey into themselves, because you have to make the longest journey into yourself in many cases to even make the journey back to Kemet, back to the original Tanetter land. And I'm saying the Tanetter land is the original holy land right there in Kemet that means black, that the Greeks referred to as Egypticus. Thus, we get the name Egypt, as it's referred to today. So, again, you know, when someone has been trained, okay, and indoctrinated, then, of course, they're going to do everything to fight to save the master's history and so forth. I mean, it's the same thing on the plantation. Mm-hmm. You know, there are many slaves who got dropped to Mania. You know, that's a runaway slave. Okay, they're still on the books. And so they would run away, but there were other slaves who did not want to run away, okay, who were trained to stay on the plantation. They put fear in them, okay, to not want to run away. So it's mental now. So there's the fear to think outside of what your master has taught them. So that becomes a big battle. That becomes a big fight. But once you're able to get the brain to think, and doing comparative analytical analysis, okay, and people can see that, then you can start to make some leeways into using what the brain is for, an organ is to think. And once you get brothers and sisters to think beyond the belief of indoctrination of a white supremacy God and the white supremacy Western world and all these things that they have taught us, then they can start to unlock something that's been lying dormant in themselves. And what has been lying dormant within themselves is our ancestral genetic memory bank. We still hold the genes of our ancestors' story in us. They've been passed down, but that's the reason why Europeans had to indoctrinate us with such a vicious self-hatred and inferiority complex to keep that doorway, to keep that genetic memory bank. And I'm quoting Dr. Richard King, who's a good friend of mine, who's now an ancestor. In fact, we were in the Gnostic studies together in Los Angeles, the Aquarium Gnostics under Dr. Lagan. And so he wrote a book on the African origin of biological psychiatry. Mm-hmm. So that was always impressed me when he pointed out the unlocking the ancestral genetic memory bank that we all have.
And well, just to reflect off of what you're stating, recently I was in a classroom. It had to be maybe sixth or seventh grade classroom. And the children in the classroom did not have a concept of chronology. So when you speak about thousands of years ago, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, and longer than that, they really didn't understand it until I stated before Jesus. When I stated before Jesus, then the light bulb started to go off that this was very old. So a lot of our people really don't even understand time and how our ancestors had the advantage of having time over every other group of people on the planet.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right, brother. I mean, but it's sad that you had to evoke Jesus, because you actually, just evoking the name Jesus, probably the next question to ask, what does he look like now that I mention his name? So, but in terms of chronology, when you say B.C., you know, before the Christian era, that's what it really is, or B.C.E., that's the before the Christian era would be a proper way of doing it, you know. But keep in mind that Europeans literally cut out Africans' time. That's why they have B.C. Mm-hmm. Okay, they literally count time down and then start it back up. That starts with Augustus Caesar. Augustus Caesar is the one that literally cut out Africans' times after his defeat of Cleopatra and Mark Antony. And this is what started their time. They literally started the Western time with 1 AD, and that's Anno Domini. So going into the Byzantine Roman Christians who come on the scene, they're the ones who established this Western version of Christianity. And by establishing a Western version of Christianity, they start time with their time. So, you know, Anno Domini, and so that becomes the time that people focus on. So when you go back beyond that, mm-hmm. you're right, the chronology of time, they know they don't have no references to, okay? Now, of course, when our ancestors, you know, one of the timetables that they left us is right there in the Hall of the Ancestors, right there. You've traveled back there with us. You've seen the holy city of Abtu, Sitiwan, okay, who built the temple there, okay, in honor of this sacred place, because it was the sacred place of Asar. And building that temple there, he put the Hall of the Ancestors. And there Sitiwan is showing his son Ramesu II, 76 Shanus. Shanus are the royal names, starting with Narmer, and then ending with Sitiwan of the 19th dynasty. He'd been the last one who put that Shanu on there. There's not a nation on the planet Earth that can give us a timeline, okay, that's over 2,000 years on one wall. Okay, you can't find it in Asia, Arabia, or Europe that can show you a timeline where a king left 2,000 years of history and starting with Norm, as I said, and ending with SETI One. And if, and these are not mystical or mythical kings, okay? These are real personalities. So, of course, when we look at from the biblical account, one has to question if many of these biblical characters even lived. Mm-hmm. That's another question that, you know, that we have to deal with. Now, some people, you know, that's why I go along with Proverbs. And Proverbs says that the prudent man looketh well to his going, but the fool believeth every word. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that, so that's some good things that we need to know when it comes down to many of these Bibles has been written down through the millennials, okay? And the first Bibles of the Western world were written on the African continent. They weren't written in Europe. They weren't written in Jerusalem. They were written in Egypt. Where in Egypt? Alexandria, Egypt. Why in Alexandria, Egypt? When the Greeks came in, Alexander, the barbarian that I refer to as our children are taught to call the Great, okay, he is the one that got Aristotle to plunder many temples up and down the Nile. And his wish was to build a library to house all of ancient African Kemetic knowledge. And he never saw the library, but it was the Ptolemies who fulfilled that dream with him, starting with Ptolemy the First, and built that library of Alexandria that housed all the sacred knowledge of ancient Kemet. But fortunately, Kemet carved on all the temples. They carved the earliest language of the Middle Nature that the Greeks referred to as the hieroglyphics. Okay, there was no Aramaic yet. There was no Hebrew yet. There was no Arabic yet. These languages did not exist yet when the Middle Nature, when our ancestors were carving it on many of these temples that we see. Temples like Ibn Asut, okay, referred to as Karnak today, or Ibn Risud, you know, referred to as Luxor today. Okay, and many other temples like the Temple of Heru and many others. And even the Greeks who came in and usurped the throne of ancient Kemet, like the Ptolemies, and came in and plundered and got artisans to tear down and rebuild some of the temples, but still they're worshiping ancient African spiritual deities at this time. This is how the Western world was awakened to spirituality, African spirituality, that was corrupted into making and Greek mythology that is later formulated into European Western Christianity, based off of the spiritual stories and one of the earliest stories, as we all know, of Osiris, Set, and Aru, that early spiritual trinity, and of the holy birth and Madonna and child, and Heru born of a holy birth from his mother, Set. This is where the Western world got these things from. That's why it's so important to understand where are these Bibles written at. Okay, where do they start at? Okay, that's where it starts with the Septuagint version of the Bible. And when you start to bring these things up, then everybody starts to look cross-eyed. Mm. All right? Because now you have validity to this. But as I said, the temples, fortunately, our ancestors carved on the temples. Okay? And even though they robbed the temples, but the stories are still there. The Madonna and child, like at the Temple of Aset, is still there. We can still see her holding the holy child, Heru. All right? Long before the Europeans plagiarized it and corrupted it and gave no respect to the fact of where it came from, all right, and in fact turned around and called ancient Kemetic spiritual stories pagan and heathen, and these negative connotations that people have gotten, because anyone that can see the comparison, they had to put up these negative connotations in relationship to ancient Kemet because they can see, well, which one was first, okay? Well, the first one was ancient Kemet. If you're in a classroom and you draw a picture, and then the person next to you, okay, who has no creativity to draw for themselves, and they just copy off of the other person's paper, okay, then, but who drew the first paper? Who drew the first? Who came up with the ideas? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the question that one has to ask when you look at the Madonna and Child of the Western world. Why do they have the same exact thing? Okay, if the Kemetic ones are supposed to be so pagan and heathen, okay, and this one is first, then why did you copy this pagan, so-called pagan and heathen image? All right, this is the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. All right, if we're looking at the Hebrew story, we're looking at the story equally, ideas were copied, you know, spiritual ideas, you know. Kemet was based off of moral law, okay? It was a cosmic Neturt or goddess, okay? Ma'at, okay, based off of truth, justice, and righteousness. You see the king who had to defeat his enemies, okay, to keep Isfet out the temple. The Berdet, the sun disk wing that's over all the temples that we see now with little white angels with the sun disk wing behind their head. All these things were copied from Kemet, but here we see the ideas of Ma'at, truth, justice, and righteousness. One proclaiming, I have not robbed, I have not stolen, ends up being in what is known as the Ten Commandments. And even though it says right there in the Bible that Moses was learning all the wisdom of the Egyptians, okay, and mighty in the words and deeds, okay, all this, that's why Kemet had to be turned into something negative when we look at it from the European Western religions, okay, whether that be Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, is looked at it from a very negative point of view, okay, because without ancient Kemet, all right, many of these religions and Western civilization, let's go as far as humanity, wouldn't even be here, because it started in the fallopian tube through their own anthropology, from the Adobe Gorge, from the highlands of Ethiopia, okay, with Dikanesh, okay, today referred to as Lucy, okay, or also we look at adulthood. Here we see the first Homo sapiens sapien, all right, like us, okay, 154,000 years older than the mythical Adam, okay. Here's the real story. So here we see that without the now, we wouldn't even have humanity on the planet Earth, if you want to call it, you know, these Europeans associate them with humanity. But they wouldn't even be here. But yet they give recognition to anthropology now. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to take it on the level of spirituality and religion and Western civilization equally came from African people. They haven't got there yet. Because, again, the Western world has been functioning off of white idolatry. That means black people worshiping them. Okay, and deifying them, and the fear that there'll be cracks in the white supremacy idolatry. This is what they fear more than anything else, because it will start to crumble. The only reason why white supremacy system is held up is because of us, because we worship it. Mm-hmm. Many white folks don't even believe a lot of this stuff that they put out here. Okay, they're even questioning it now. That's why they spend so much time trying to get Negroes in the church. In fact, they don't even try. Negroes run to the white folks' church. Okay. We are the number one believers. And the question is, why is that? Because we are naturally, innately a spiritual people. We brought spirituality to the world. It's just that they have corrupted. It's like mother making a cake. My mother make a cake and she make a chocolate cake and it's a chocolate cake. Okay. And then they came along and put a white icing on the cake and then called it Angel's food cake and called her cake the devil's food cake. Okay, so the demonizing and the vilifying of our own spirituality, okay, and our own black divinity, this is what keeps us away from it.
Talk a little bit about the phenotype of the Africans in the Nile Valley. I know a lot of times people look at what's shown to us in the media, whether it be the Ten Commandments story, whether it be gods of Egypt, or just recently the bust that was portrayed of Nefertiti. We did a show, we talked about Nefertiti and the background of Nefertiti, but talk a little bit about the phenotype of the Africans in the Nile Valley from the Old Kingdom on the way up to the New Kingdom.
Well, without question, I mean, we can look at the phenotype of the largest colossal on the planet Earth, and that is Ra Hurum Akit, who the Greeks referred to as a weak-named Sphinx, okay? We're talking about 240 feet long and over 66 feet high. We're talking about his ears are 7 feet tall. You can stand inside of his ears. And let's look at his face. Let's look at the phenotype of his face. And clearly we can see that's an African, a European himself, who wrote Ruins of the Empire, Count Boney, who came there and saw the face and clearly gave description that using the term Negro, as they were using at that time, okay, that Thomas Jefferson refused for his book to be republished in the United States because of him recognizing the fact that this is an African colossal. Not only is it an African colossal, but here he also says this is where we get our sciences and even our use of speech. This is where he's validating through this colossal, okay, where the Europeans, the whole idea of science and even speech came from African people by looking up at that colossal right there of the phenotype of Ra Hurum Akit. And then with Napoleon, and there's some Negroes out there to say this is a myth that Napoleon had nothing to do with blowing off the nose. Okay, well, first of all, the person who wrote that is Maspero. Okay, now Maspero is the curator of the Cairo Museum in the late 18 and early 1900s. He's the curator of the museum. He's a Frenchman himself. Now, the Europeans were trying to destroy. When they first came in, they tried to destroy a lot of the colossals and and when Belzoni and many others were dragging these colossal statues out into to put into European museums. When you go to Europe and you go to the British Museum and you see all these colossal statues all over the place, well, these Europeans were stealing it. Okay, these colossal, when they first came in, it was a hatred because they saw the phenotype of the Africans, and they were breaking them up, smashing them up, and so forth, and saying all kinds of negative things, okay, in relationship, clearly seeing the African phenotype and the hatred to the fact that here that they see the African history was thousands of years older than their history. And that has always been the problem that they have had in terms of dealing with African history when looking at the phenotype. But anyway, Maspero, who now Europeans say, well, we'll just claim this for ourselves. We'll just Europeanize it. In fact, we'll make a term called Hamites, okay? In fact, this Maspero on the second floor that I show our groups every year where he put up there that Maharpra of the 18th dynasty, and he's given a description of Maharpra. Now, people from all over the world, okay, see Maharpra. You can see Harper is very melanated. He's black, okay? And Maspero makes it a point to note in this little frame that he's Negroid, but not actually a Negro. Mm. Okay, so this is the hatred. Automatically, Europeans already got a hatred now in destroying the African colossals, okay? And then start to take many of them off into Europe, okay, into their museums in France, the Louvre and the British Museum, the Metropolitan Museum, and many others, museums around the world. In Germany and so forth. So Maspero, okay, now they're trying to claim this. So they don't want Napoleon, okay, to get the rap for what he did, blowing off the nose. So it was Maspero who said that Napoleon had nothing to do with it, that it was a myth. That's where that came from, okay? And Negroes who don't want to respect Dr. Ben's work, Dr. Ben was a specialist in the Nile Valley, okay, who spoke a few languages, okay? So not only did he read books in English, he read it in French, okay, and in Spanish, okay? So Dr. Ben always made sure that in Black Men of the Nile and Africa, the Mother of Western Civilization, and many other books that he's put, he always made a point to the fact that Napoleon, okay, blew off the nose of Hiram Akit, okay, with the cannons, all right? The Mamelukes did not have cannons. Okay, that's what made Napoleon's defeat of the Mamelukes easy, because they did not have cannons. Mm-hmm. Napoleon is the one that had the cannon to blow off the nose. So here, Dr. Ben documents this through who? Okay, who's with Napoleon? Okay, Baron Vivian Dinan, who gave a sketch of this colossal statue, okay, and witnessing these things, all right? So here we see that... when someone says that this is a myth, they're literally parroting what this European named Maspero said, okay, who equally has racist remarks on some of the pieces, like Maharpa that I just mentioned. But when we look at whether so-called pre-dynastic, that Petrie refers to as a pre-dynastic, when we look at those ancient pieces, we can clearly see that they're African. We can still see an archaic period. With Norma, we can clearly see the phenotype that this is an African here, or whether we're looking at Zolzer Netterket, who commissioned a multi-genius named Imhotep to build him the world's first stone building right there, the start of the pyramid building of that third golden age of ancient Kemet, called the golden age because it's the start of the pyramid building. Now, so you're looking at the phenotype. Anyone can see that these are Africans, equally as I take people in the Cairo Museum and take them in the back room, and let's look at the Middle Kingdom of Amenhotep III, where he, back in the 80s, when I was coming there, he was in the front. He was the first one you saw when you came in the front, okay? Mm-hmm. Now he's in the back room in a storage room, okay, with his nose blown off, okay, knocked off, okay? Now, and it seems one that got the most boldest phenotype, and let me quote Dr. Ben, as he always made it clear, okay, there's no one prototype that defines an African facial characteristic, and meaning that Africans got wide nose, thin nose, thick lips, and thin lips. You know, traveling around the African continent, we can see all the various phenotypes, okay, and the various levels of melanated Africans around the world. And when you see the various phenotypes, okay, this is what makes African people, all right? When you keep in mind, we're talking about 12 million square miles, okay, of the African continent. So you see the variations all over the African continent. But the ones that seems got the wide nose, those are the ones that we see always seems to be knocked off that we always see. But when you look at the chronology and see the various time periods that coming on the way down and what they put emphasis on, okay, are many of the Greco-Roman periods, okay? Now, in terms of this Nefertiti statue, this is a repeat. Europeans know that there's a new generation. Mm-hmm. Every decade, they repeat what they did 10 or maybe 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So going back to, like, King Tutankhamun, when National Geographic made an image of King Tutankhamun and gave us this Boy George image of King Tutankhamun, that was about 20 years ago. So now it's a new generation now. It's time for a new indoctrination now. So they just regurgitate this thing back again to indoctrinate this new generation that's coming here. And the thing about it, they're so racist with their whole idea, we can go into the Cairo Museum and see the bust that our ancestors left. So if you got a bust of King Tutankhamun, why do you got to make another image of him? Mm-hmm. So the Nefertiti, okay, is the same thing. Well, Nefertiti is the wife of Akhenaten of the 18th dynasty. Okay, we're talking about Nefertiti, and this is the one that the bust that they've now given us of this European image of Nefertiti. And this is what they're displaying, even though, and Mary Ra, my wife has been dealing with this for years, okay, in her fashion lecture, you know, started way back in the around 1994 when she was doing research and where she saw where the Germans, when they did the research in the background on this bust of Nefertiti that a German, okay, created this one, okay, and found that it was a fake, all right? So now it's been documented as a fake. Now it's brought back to this new generation, okay, that's out here now, as it's a real, this is a real bust of Nefertiti. That is the same fake that they established as a fake 10 or 15 years ago. But it's, you know, we're talking about a continuation of an indoctrination of white supremacy in the mind of a new generation, in the mind of white folks and white kids, okay, to make sure that they have this white supremacy mindset. And Egypt was white. As I said before, at one time, they knew, they called Egypt for what it was. Anyone that will go back to the Webster's Dictionary in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and I don't like to use the term, okay, because it was made on the plantation. I'm only saying it in reference to show the derogatory terminology that they gave reference to us and to show that they clearly saw that the Kemetic Africans were black. And at that time, they said the Egyptians were niggers. That's in Webster's Dictionary. Until they said, we got to take this and make it white because they saw the greatness in it. They had no, Europe had no ancient history beyond the Greeks. And that's when they started to claim it and started to clean up their act and try to now, listen, we're going to make all of this white and we're going to whiteize everything. And by 1990, there was a full-scale attack on the whole African-centered movement at this time. This is when many, back in the 80s, when the black bookstores were going on and many of the lectures were going on in the community. And unfortunately, when we're in this movement, there were those who felt that whites should be involved in this. And there were those like Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark who felt that whites should not be involved in this. And I was in that camp, okay? But those who felt that whites should be involved, okay, started inviting whites to the communiversities. Peace be upon him, as Bobby Wright refers to it as, okay, communiversities, when having lectures in the community. And here they start bringing whites in, okay, in the 80s, and by 1990 it was a full-scale attack. So they were monitoring what we were doing, dealing with the facts. The students on the college campuses were challenging white supremacist professors who were dealing with Socrates and Plato and Thales and Pythagoras, and the students were validating what Thales and Pythagoras were getting their information from. And coming into the classroom with Stolen Legacy, Dr. George G.M. James's book, and a lot of other material, Dr. Diop's works, and Dr. Ben, and many others. So this is where there was a fear that they saw a crack was starting to happen in the white supremacy academia. So to make sure that this thing stands up, we see that this whole now regurgitation of their white supremacy images of Nefertiti, this new King Tutankhamun. Okay, they're now even bringing that back again, okay, to make sure that that's locked into the minds of the people. Even during the 1990, when they came out and put Cleopatra on the cover of Newsweek, and trying to make that the image, okay, and make it look like we were trying to, you know, some people who, some professors who were arguing over the ethnicity of Cleopatra. And the fact of the matter is, the smart thing to have done at that time was to say, look, keep Cleopatra. Let's do it Nefertari the first. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's 1,500 years BCE. All right, there was no Greeks yet, all right, at that time. Let's deal with Hatshepsut. There was no Greeks yet at that time. But they put her on the cover, okay, and threw bait out there and for us to argue with, because most of us, we just know Cleopatra. Why do we know Cleopatra? Because of Mark Anthony and the Caesar and Cleopatra and all those stories that we're bombarded with through the movies and so forth. And that's what we know. All right, but in fact, we go back, we can see we can't get caught into no Greek time for them to argue with. We have to go back to the ancient Kemetic time. And that's where you brought up the idea of chronology, brother. Mm-hmm. Because if we knew and understood chronology of time, we would understand the chronology of ancient Kemet. And then we would understand that that was at the end of the dynastic period of Kemet. Okay, that was the Greco, the Greeks at this time ruling Kemet at this time with the Ptolemies. The ancient Kemetic history ended with Nectanebo. He was the last African, not Cleopatra. Okay, Cleopatra's line was from the usurpers of ancient Kemet. So this is important of knowing the chronology and knowing the history. And this is the biggest fear that the Europeans still have to this very day, is that we will unlock the ancient African history of our ancestors and see that we have a history older than his. That was the fear on the plantation, and it's still the fear on this neo-plantation today, to see that we predate them by thousands of years in our ancestors' historical legacy. So again, when we look at the phenotypes that you brought up with the question, we can clearly see that throughout the millennials, everything that they have done to try to destroy the image of African people. And this still goes on to this very day. And many of the cases, when they show us many of these busts and so forth, they're showing us Greco-Romans, okay? Many cases, or they're showing the time of, that there were some usurpers on the throne, or the Persians, okay, or the Assyrians, and some of the Hyksos, and all these many invaders that came in on Kemet. But they don't deal with the serious busts, okay, and colossal pieces. But fortunately, our ancestors built the greatest and largest and oldest colossal on the planet Earth that is still there. And like many of the invasions that came in, the first thing they had to look up is the phenotype of this great African colossal, and that is Ra, Hurum, Akhet, Haru, and Horizing, looking to the east with the helical rising of the constellation of Leo, symbolizing Haru, as you see him in his recumbent form with a lion, the power of the lion of the king, of the lion of the king. And it has the Haru head that we see, that colossal that most people are familiar with on the planet.
You're right. And even the scholars, the white scholars who do try to claim that the Africans in the Nile Valley were black, they often try to separate and chop up the African continent and say that, you know, West Africa had nothing to do with East Africa, or East Africa and West Africa had nothing to do with South Africa. And they come up with these derogatory terms like Bushman and Pygmy and True Negro versus Nilotic Negro and all of these different things that they use to try to separate African people. But as the great ancestor Dr. Asa Hilliard said, he said that Egypt is as important to African people as Greece and Rome is to European people.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That's right. This is how they do it, and they make up terms. When we see these terms, Hemetic, this is a racist creation. Okay, Semitic. This is a racist creation. So East Africa is looked at as Hemetic. Okay. These are the terms that they have actually created to divide up African people. And as you just said, you know, then when you look at Greece and you look at Rome, they're closer to Africa than it is to northern part of Europe. So we could come into Europe and literally erase the northern part of Europe and say it has nothing to do with Greece and Rome. And separate it, okay? But this is the keep in mind, the Europeans have always divided and conquered. So when Dr. Jacob Carruthers wrote his book, Intellectual Warfare, I think it's a great book to get because it talks about this era when the whole movement was attacked and everybody was under attack. In fact, there was a letter named, a white boy named Mailer, okay, from Purdue University, who put a letter out on me that did everything to try to stop me from lecturing at universities. The letter was out there for 5 years before I even knew it was out there, but he put me in an honorable place with Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and another warrior scholar, Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, who was a good friend of mine as well. So there was a war going on, and the masses of our people didn't know about that war at that time. And Dr. Jacob Carruthers put together his book, Intellectual Warfare, that pretty much laid out that air. But unfortunately, many people were just totally oblivious to the fact that the attack that was going on at that time.
That's right. Well, we know you're coming to Charlotte next week, and you're going to be dealing with the African origin of Christianity. Now that DVD.
No, I'm not coming with African origin of Christianity. I'm coming with African history and spirituality, the origin of the Bible.
Okay. Okay.
That one there. Yeah, so that keeps it in coming right out of, you know, we're always in Black history. We just can't look at February, but we're always in Black history. But that's the lecture I'm coming with this time. Maybe next time I'll come with the African origin of Christianity.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, brothers and sisters, what you heard tonight is really only the tip of the iceberg in regards to the information that our ancestors left for us in the Nile Valley. And I know you're going to expound on it even further when you come out next week. For those of you who are listening, if you want to see a great lecture next week by Baba Ashraf Kwesi, you want to visit the Little Rock AME Zion Cultural Center on 401 North McDowell Street in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's going to start at 7 p.m., so you want to get there early to make sure that you get a good seat. And from what I can see, the tickets are free. So definitely want to come out, bring the family out, and come out and support our great teacher, Ashraf Kwesi, as he makes his visit out here to Charlotte.
And we want to thank you for your African Community Radio. Brother, you know, this is another form of educating our people. So we look at this as a community too, and like I say, it's not too sound, first time being on here, and again, the whole idea is to make people think. So as long as we're thinking about who we are, I think we're on our way. But if you're not thinking about who you are at all, then of course we're going to always be in a slave.
That's right. That's right. But brother, again, thank you for joining us, and Asante Sana Madasi, and thank you for listening to the African Liberation Media Podcast, Abibi Fahodie.
Shimotep, my brother.
Power or the lack of power. I want to repeat this. Power or the lack of power. If your education in this institution is not about gaining real power, not jobs, because your jobs do not represent power. Not getting elected, that does not represent power either. Buying your houses and fine clothes does not represent power. If it is not about real power, you are being miseducated and misled, and you will die educated and misled. If your study of Black history is merely an exercise in feeling good about yourself, then you will die feeling good. The study of history then must be more than the pumping up of your self-esteem and the bumping up of your pride. Those things are important, but ultimately, those things are not the means by which we will save ourselves as people in this world.